Yeah, I just wanted to spend this period just before we go for lunch. I just wanted to do a sort of overview of where we're headed. I want to tap slightly back into the poem as well, which has been a preoccupation for quite a long time. I suppose in the end, we could say that the whole thing revolves around this idea of the Grail. What is the Grail? Because the poem that we've looked at, the King Arthur's raid on the underworld, Prithae Anuvin, is the earliest description of the quest of the Grail. The interesting thing about the Grail in all the literature is that nobody knows what it is. You know, properly there's this image, or it's the cup of Christ, or it's, some people say it's the cauldron of inspiration, but actually it's this fluid, mysterious, shape-shifting thing. If you read the actual texts, the Grail appears, it's never described. What's described is its effects. And the effect of the Grail, one of the effects of the Grail, is you get given the most delicious, each person gets given the food that is best for them in all the world. So it's this presence, in a sense, of blessing that gives what is precisely what is needed to whoever comes into the presence of the Grail. And probably one of the best descriptions ever you find of the Grail is a negative description. That which does not regenerate is not the Grail.
Mm. Oh, yes.
That which does not regenerate is not the Grail. Mm.
It comes from
the Grail text, the Merlin Grail text, by Robert de Boron. And what do you find in all the medieval Grail stories? There's always a knight. There's always who's searching, or series of knights very often, who is searching for the Grail. And they find. They're always consulting wise hermits because they're trying to understand, well, what is this thing we're looking for? Where can it be found? And so there's a whole process in the Grail text of searching for something, and a lot of dialogue. And so in the Robert de Boron text, he asks, well, what is the Grail? And the hermit's always cryptic. They always answer like this. They're sort of kind of enigmatic, kind of like Zen masters. So, can you explain to me what the Grail is? And that which does not regenerate is not the Grail. And it's an interesting phrasing in some ways, because he could have said, it's something that regenerates. But actually he uses the negative. It's like you would know it, not by its form, but by the experience of generation. And it also suggests that, it kind of suggests that if you're going to look for it, you'd have to look for it in an elliptical kind of way. Because you can't even look for, okay, I'll look for something that regenerates. That isn't what he's saying. He's not saying look for the thing that regenerates. He says that which does not regenerate is not the Grail. So one of the very key things, the very important things, is to identify what is not the Grail. Because of course, in much of our seeking, much of our desires, we of course are desiring and seeking for things that are not the Grail. I'm just going to read you the poem again, just to remind us of the poem. I praise the sovereign high prince of the kingly land, who encompasses the margins of the world. Gwaith's captivity in Caerfyrddin is resonant with the tale of Pwyll and Pryderi. None before him was sent into it, into the heavy blue chain that bound the faithful youth. Because of the raid upon Anuvin, he sorely sings. Until the world's ending, our poet's prayer shall sound. Three ship burdens of Prydwen entered within, except seven, none rose up from Caerfyrddin. but for seven, none returned from the castle of the mound. I am renowned in fame, the song is heard in Kaupadevran, four times revolving. My original song stems from the cauldron. By the breath of nine maidens it is kindled. The chief of Anavin's cauldron, what's its power? Ridged with enamel, rimmed with pearl. It will not boil the coward's portion. It isn't destined. The sword of Chleuach flashes before it, and in the hand of Chleuminach the leap of it is wielded. Before hell's gates, lights are burning. When with Arthur we go to the harrowing, except seven, none rose up from Caerfyrddin. But for seven, none returned from the castle of the perfected ones. I am renowned in fame, the song is heard in the foursquare fort, in the island of the flaming door. Fresh water and jet are mixed, and bright wine is served to the host. Three ship burdens of Prudwen we took to sea. Except seven, none rose up from Caerigor. But for seven, none returned from the royal castle. I give no reward to the Lord's bookmen, who beyond Caerwydry saw not Arthur's valour. 6,000 men stand upon the wall. It is hard to parley with the sentinel. Three ship burdens of Prudwen we go with Arthur. Except seven, none rose up from Caergolith. But for seven, none can return from the castle of the wall. I give no reward to the clerics with trailing shields, who know not who created who, nor the hour when the chick was born. Who made him? Why does he not go to the meadows of Devwy? They know not whose the brindled ox, thick his headband, with 70 links upon his collar. When we went with Arthur on arduous exhibition, except seven, none rose from Caerfyrddin. But for seven, none returned from the castle of the deep sea. I give no reward to the clerics of weak intent, who know on what day the chief is made, who do not know the hour of his birth, nor what silver-headed beast they guard. When we go with Arthur, there is disastrous contention. And but for seven, none rose up from Caerfyrddin. Apart from seven, none return from the castle of the keys. Monks howl like a choir of dogs from a contest with those who know. Does the wind have one track? Is the sea one water? Is fire one single fierce spark? Monks crowd together like wolves from a contest with those who know. They do not know the divisions of midnight and of dawn. They do not know the course of the wind. But the saint's grave lies hidden deep in the ground. I praise the sovereign, the great high prince. May sadness leave me. Christ is my protector. One of the strong things about that poem, and obviously we've studied it many times, but one of the very strong things about it is it focuses on obstacles. The castle of the wall, the Lord's bookmen, the people who do not know, the monks like a pack of wolves or a pack of dogs. It focuses on issues of imprisonment and freedom. And it's in the same territory as that which does not regenerate is not the Grail. In a sense, what it directs us towards is the places where we stop ourselves, the places where we imprison ourselves, the places where we get stopped and cannot find the way. It's indicating all along the place where we trap ourselves. And that entrapment, in a sense, is because of the, we could say, is because of seeking that which is not the Grail. And therefore that which does not regenerate, that which does not transform, that which doesn't take us into the mysterious, into the new. A very simple version of this, which Ali has experienced many times in my life, is when I lose something. It's the impulse that you look in the place where you know it is not, but it should be there. It's a silly thing, but it's the tip of an iceberg. Okay, it's the place where I look in the known, not in the unknown, because of my need my need for certainty, my need for things to be as I wish them to be. You know, a large part of my resistance to the wretched exercise bike is because I hate the fact I got fat and old, and in order to service my body, I have to sort of spend an hour. You know, didn't have to do that when I was in my 20s. Why should I have to do it now? It's a ridiculous thing to say, but it's a real thing to say. Of course, it's part of what I feel. I resent the fact I've got old. I resent the fact I've put on weight. I resent the fact that I now have to work quite hard to get my body to work. You know, it's part of, again, it's desiring something that is not the Grail. You know, because in a sense, the movement towards the Grail is the movement towards mystery. It is the quest, the perpetual quest for something that keeps eluding you. The Grail stories, you know, this great image in the... This afternoon and tomorrow, I'm going to talk a lot more about the she pack, really, and really look at some of the deeper structures. But one of the great, there are two great images in the extension pack that we're going to look at quite a lot, really. One is this image of the Knight of Fiery Hope, and it holds really well this image of the knight who. When you look at the Grail stories, the need for the Grail, the search for the Grail, comes about because the land is wasted, the kingdom is in disrepair, things are pretty bloody shit, really, and you can't see the way. It isn't a sort of isn't coming out of an abundant time. It's coming out of the idea that we need help. And so this image of the Knight of Fiery Hope who can go on the quest, so, you know, it's at one level, it's a completely mad quest, isn't it? They're looking for something, they don't even know what it is. You know, they don't know what it looks like, they don't know where it could be found, you know, it's sort of... So this energy of hope, it's like faith and hope, not in the... The problem with these words, faith and hope, is they've been kind of... They've been used as manipulative concepts by religions and politicians over, you know, many hundreds of years. And because it's but these ideas, the deeper ideas of both faith and hope, is the faith really is the commitment to that deeper place, that mysterious place. A belief in that, a belief in mystery, and hope is the capacity to envisage that mysterious place can make things better, can enable new life. So this image of fiery hope is this kind of fusion, if you like, of will, of commitment, and of vision. That there is something that can be found that is tangible. Because the other thing about the Grail is it's not ethereal. It's actually, you know, it sounds ethereal because nobody knows what it is. It's this mysterious thing. But actually, if you find it, you get the best sandwich you've ever had in your life. Okay? Or the perfect cup of tea. It transfigures the material. It's a fusion, really, of the of opposites, where the transcendental is immanent. The immanent becomes transcendental. So there's a sort of... it's a very gutsy, solid, down there earthy kind of thing, and it's this mysterious, transcendent energy thing. But I can't even call it energy, we don't know what it is. We know it's by its effects, by its regenerative capacity. The thing about the Grail Quest as well is that it's both solitary and not solitary. It's particular to each person, but no one can do it on their own. They have to keep consulting with people, discussing with things. There's lots of errors in the quest. The knights get it wrong all the time. But the main thing is that they don't give up the quest. As long as they, what happens in the Grail, the difference between those who win the Grail and those who don't, in the old stories anyway, the ones who win the Grail just don't give up. They just keep on going. They make just as many mistakes as all the others, but they stay on the path, and they gradually learn from their experiences, and gradually find they're directed by the Grail itself somewhere. So it means they stay in touch with that energy of faith and hope. Now, as we begin this course, in a sense, as we sort of re-engage with each other and look into taking these things more deeply, we, of course, have to look at the life that we're living and the conditions that we're living in, and in a way, if you like, there's four aspects of our life that we will always be visiting in the shape of this course. One, of course, is our personal life, whatever is going on for us personally. It's really crucial that they're the personal life, because of course the personal is the immediate and is the anchor for everything else. But that somewhere is held in tension with the what we might call the transcendental part of ourselves, right? The sort of the deeper, we could call it the soul part, or the deeper part, the mysterious part of ourselves. So the personal and the transpersonal. The other thing that we will continually look at is our relationship to being a human being, therefore to the archetypal human field. We are also beings of the earth and of nature, so we will also be looking at our relationship to nature, to Gaia, you could say, to the planet, to the earth. So these four dimensions somewhere are just with us all the time, and so we will be quite consciously paying attention to that in our quest for the Grail.
What's the fourth?
There's the transpersonal, there's the personal, there's the Gaian, and there's the human, archetypal human. Gaian, or the earth, nature, you could say, the relationship to nature, to the planet, the universe. You know, so there are these four kind of dimensions, four overlapping vast fields somewhere, which come together.
Human,
the humanness, the archetypal humanness, are part of being a human being. The part of us that is in relationship with nature, the part of us in relation to personal life, the part of us in relation to transpersonal life. And in a sense, if we are truly present, we of course are present to all of these. So as we sit here and now, we're present to our whatever's going on in our personal life. I'm with my bike, Becky's with her cat. You know, we're all with our own versions of that. So that's resonating in us somewhere. We're also, because of the nature of what we're looking at, we're in relationship to our sense of the deeper, our sense of the transpersonal, whatever that particularly means for us. That's sitting with us somewhere. We have the fern with us sitting there, reminding us of the whole natural environment, so our sense of the world, our sense of autumn right now, of the leaves falling off the trees, our sense of climate change, our sense of, you know, whatever we, our relationship to that is somewhere with us. And what's also with us is our relationship to the human collective, and if we look at this, and of course all these things intermesh, none of these are separate, but if we pay attention to what's going on in humanity at the moment, there's a lot of confusion and a lot of conflict. You know, so the image of the monks gathering together like packs of wolves is a very potent human image at the moment. You know, people are, you have the rise of nationalist movements. We've got versions of the Cold War, which hopefully won't become a hot war, starting again. I always get really nervous when there's issues about the Baltic states, because NATO is sending troops into the Baltic states at the moment. Because they're worried about Russia. But these are the sort of fault line, you know. But obviously, we've got Trump in America and whatever that means. So it does mean we're addressing this in turbulent times. Now, the thing about turbulent and difficult times, external difficult times like this, is it can really interfere with our quests in some ways. Because to stay in the middle of all this in turbulent times is difficult. There's the danger that people can cut off from it and just go towards the transpersonal or towards nature and the transpersonal and get away from humans, because humans are so terrible. There's also the other compulsion where you get obsessed with the political and the personal and think, well, that's got to get sorted out, and this spiritual stuff can just wait. But the true, if you like, capacity of the knight in this area, who is connected to faith and to fiery hope, is to stay balanced in the middle, letting these four domains come together and support each other somehow. Now that sounds great, but in practice it's very difficult, because it does mean that as we sit here, we have to be in relationship with whatever's happening in the American election, the confusions of our own government in Brexit, and whatever that means to all of us, the rise of nationalism in Europe, you know, and so you don't really want it, you know, in this space you don't really want it, and yet the whole point about this work is to be able to be centered enough so that you meet it, so that the capacity of the Grail to regenerate is not diminished by us splitting the world. Now, what you find happening in the Grail stories a lot of the time is the knights go off and get imprisoned. Because they think they go off to the, you know, classically, they go off to the Castle of Maidens. Because it's not hard to imagine why they're doing that. Because because actually sexuality, the kind of desire, becomes one of the places where you can get locked up. If it's a female knight, it might be the castle of young guys. You know, of young knights. If you're heterosexual, you know, if you're gay, it'd be a different thing. But a lot of the Grail stories are describing places where we go off and get stuck. And a lot of the time, really, the art of the work really is not to get stuck. You do, but to recognize when you're stuck. To know you're paradoxically, to know you're imprisoned is the beginning of becoming free. And there's something about the power, the place of being, of maintaining faith and hope in the places of imprisonment, that really enables the quest. You know, you have only to look at somebody like Nelson Mandela, you know, who spent most of his adult life in prison and maintained hope, maintained faith. In impossible, genuinely impossible. So it's very easy, you know, if you look at Mandela now, and you look at it, you know, what happened in his life. It looks like you feel the success of it, but what of course is not so easy to feel, is when he was actually in that, he couldn't possibly have known that things would work out. Because they weren't working out. I mean, he was imprisoned by one of the most pernicious regimes of our time. You know, sort of the South African apartheid regime in the days of its power was incredibly powerful and incredibly resistant. So the capacity that he had to keep the faith, to keep hope alive somewhere, helps me actually, because it's a tangible example, if I remember properly, of how extraordinary things can change. Now, it's how that whole situation is, you know, I'm not saying South Africa is a very difficult place and it's got lots of political problems. But the fact that that there is no longer an apartheid government and it didn't come about through a total bloodbath is one of the astonishing facts of human life. You know, all our normal understanding of human functioning is that would have happened somewhere. And of course, it's not just down to Mandela, it's down to many people who kept the faith and kept the capacity to the capacity for a transformation that did not destroy. So there's something about reaching out for these figures, who you know, the Gandhi, of course, was another one, you know, there are many, and smaller examples as well, people who enable change by keeping the faith, keeping hope alive. And in a sense then, if that intention, that's why, if you like, this work begins with this card, the Knight of Fiery Hope. It's an interesting image, because the knight is not naive. He's not the knight is armoured, the knight carries a sword. There is this great energy of fire and hope in the heart. So it's not a naive thing. It is saying, okay, I expect there to be struggle. I expect there to be challenge. But there is a sort of a code of chivalry, a code of honour. So even in the fighting, because of course in the art of transformation, in the place of addressing the issues of the world, we have to struggle, we have to contend, but we contend with honour. You contend honestly, you need the clarity of the sword, you need the energy of will, and you need the protection of the armour. But you are not going to be unchivalrous, you're not going to destroy, so you're going to contend honestly. Because of course, whenever we want to change things, whether in ourselves or in the world, we hit that which stops us changing. That's why the poem is so concerned with the things that stop us. And so learning how to, if you like, persist, to give battle, to challenge, to use the sword to overcome, to use that energy of clarity and will to overcome that which opposes us. And finding the different ways to do that. Now the sword is one of, in the Grail stories, is one of the hallows of the Grail. So we don't know what the Grail is, but there are these things that are called the hallows. They're called the objects which are somehow transmit the mysterious energy of the Grail. And one of these energies is the sword. It's the same sword you find in the Grail, in that poem, the Sword of Flashing Light. So it's a sword that clarifies, that cuts through. And it represents that energy of will and focus and the ability to cut through imprisonment. Now the other great image that associated with the Grail is the image of the cup, the chalice or the cauldron. So that's the kind of the other energy in a sense. It's the energy of holding, of connection, the archetypal feminine energy. So this is about the masculine and the feminine energies working together. So it's our capacity to, if you like, in a sense, the sword in one level represents that capacity for sovereignty, for clarity, to make distinction. Here I am, this is me, this is my domain, this is my land, this is the place I stand on, this is the place I defend. Now, if I'm only with the sword, I end up in a paranoid position, defending, you know, ground which more and more slips away from me in a moving world. So if I've just got the sword, and one of the big problems of our time is a lot of people have just got the sword and are waving swords around, and sort of, and you're finding very old nationalistic archetypes, the you know, the sort of Britain will be great again, you know, and get the foreigners out of here, cleanse the land with the swords, you get away from you anything that is foreign. So there's a lot of problems, you know, you've got Trump wanting to build walls to keep the Mexicans out, or, you know, so it's all of that, the energy of the sword. Now that's the misapplied energy of the sword, because actually the sword in a certain sense represents clear boundary. And boundary, of course, is also, if you haven't got boundary, there is nowhere to stand. If there isn't a boundary between the water and the land, there isn't land and water, there's a mush within, from which nothing can grow. Now we had problems I'm going to have with that plant, is keeping the balance of dryness and wetness. Of course, or, you know, so there's a boundary in keeping a plant alive. It's not too dry, not too wet, enough, dealing with the changing circumstances of its life. So the balance, in a way, of the cup and the sword, or the cauldron and the sword, is one of the really important kind of energies that we will work with. And it's, you know, to be sovereign and distinct, and to be interconnected. Now, the other image that we find in the Shi pack, in the extension pack, that relates to the Grail, these are both central cards really, is an image that Jeremy, friend Jeremy, has painted of what he, his vision of the Grail. And what you have is the image of a tree and the ghostly image of a human form and this chalice. And the Grail is somewhere in the light. The Grail is the mischievous light manifesting out of the chalice. We think the Grail is the chalice, but the chalice arises out of the joined field of the human and the tree, or in our meditation this morning, the human and the fern, and the creating of a chalice or a receptive shape that is open to the manifestation of the Grail. So, in a sense, you could say that we as knights coming into our sovereignty, holding this place of fiery hope, open ourselves to the wider world, to the human collective, to the natural world, standing on the earth, connected to the world of nature, being the human form, taking the position of being the archetypal, being yourself and being, and in yourself being the archetypal human being also. And then are open, then create in that place of fusion, creating this receptive kind of field which enables the expression of the deeper, the transpersonal, which is the living presence of the Grail, which now manifests through your personal life, through the life of humanity, through the natural world. So this image, really, the image of the Grail, this in a sense, in this card, sums up the whole work that we will keep coming back to. It's a useful image, it's a graphic image of a practice. Right, because and the practice is the practice that we just began today with this meditation where we become present to ourselves. Really noticing our bodies, noticing just what's happening. Then from becoming present to ourselves, then reaching out into the wider world, to the sense of other people around us, to the sense of the kind of the natural world, the sense of the human collective. And together what happens is, in these overlapping fields of presence, this receptive chalice shape is formed, which we then hold in faith and fiery hope. And then there is a response. So that deeper sense, that sense of the manifestation of the Grail, or the manifestation of deeper presence, starts then to work with all these aspects of ourselves, our personal life, our collective life, our relationship to the world. It's an act of communion. Now, in a sense, you really just wouldn't. In some ways, you just need these two images, these two cards. That's, you know, if we could just continually do that. It's all, yes, it's also in the glyph. The glyph is also this image of opposites. The glyph, the glyph, which is both the spiraling process and the process of a process of clarity. These images are all deeply interwoven in some ways, you know. And in a way, the additional images that we're going to be looking at with the glyph, or the she pack, they've all kind of been chosen. They're all, you know, and the reason that I've been going to be looking at them and coming back to the poem as well is because it all brings us back to this point. Because the focus, in a way, of these 2 years is to really deepen into this practice, this contemplative practice. And in a way, you know, we could, as I say, we could just use the two images, we could even just use the image of the glyph, but actually our human nature is such, it helps us to have a variety of things which remind us. Because these energies of forgetting are so kind of profound. One of the things you get all the time in some of the Grail stories is you get, the knight goes off and he discovers the magical kingdom, he meets some version of the Grail, often marries a queen or a princess of the other lands, and then lives in this kind of paradise. But what normally happens in these stories is the knight goes off and goes off on another adventure, you know, good adventure, but forgets he's got a wife, and forgets he was once a king somewhere else. And it's a very practical bit of the story in some ways, because of course we find the sense of communion, the sense of presence, and we forget it all the time. And in a way, a large part of what we will be doing in this time is reminding each other. Reminding that we have, that these capacities exist within us, and that we can open ourselves to this sort of regenerating presence. And so it's important, really, that, you know, in the work of the year, that we these 2 years, that we bring into the group, into the work, whatever is in our lives, really, you know, so that because nothing is outside, in a sense, the capacities of the Grail. You know, it doesn't have to be deeply. You know, it can be struggling with your bike, perhaps. I don't know who on earth would bring that in, but somebody might. It could be work things, it could be more personal things, it could be things about your spirituality, but not just about your spirituality. It could be something you saw on the news that affects you, right? Because it's something about, it's really about the whole art here is this art of communion. And so if we talk about, okay, we're going to be present with our personal life, we're going to be present with transpersonal life, the collective life of humanity, and the life of the planet. Well, I don't think we've left anything out there, really, have we? I mean, that's it. Right. So, the thing that's most important is, of course, if you say, well, I'm not going to be with everything, that would totally do you in. That's ridiculous. No one can do that. But it and this way, in a sense, the personal and the body is the anchor. But it is to get interested in whatever affects you. And therefore to bring whatever affects you, which could be some stupid article in a magazine, you don't know why it's affecting you. And instead of dismissing that because that's not spiritual enough or not significant enough, to welcome that in is one of the key things, and then to let it become central, to explore it, to be with it. Now, one of the things that I'm with this morning really is the fact that Exeter city centre is on fire. The old medieval city centre of Exeter has been burning for 28 hours now. Well, actually 30 odd hours now. The square around Exeter's cathedral has been burning, has been on fire. There's a big old hotel there, just burned to the ground. The gas mains went up just about 8 o'clock there. So I don't know I don't know if the fire's still burning, but it might be. And that's been good, you know, so there's a... It's a very ancient medieval square. This is the older medieval heart of Exeter, and you know, so that's the day as we sit here, that's on fire, you know, and hopefully under control now, but we don't know, but has been out of control for the last 24 hours, you know. So there's something about the. You know, and if we really apply ourselves to this idea of interconnection, I don't know what that's about. It's shocking. It's upsetting. I've been there, and you know, I do vaguely remember that hotel, but that's never going to be there again. You know, so something has gone. What is the meaning of an event like that? I don't know what the meaning is. But the whole point about things is things are mysterious. So what is the meaning of that? We all want to make meaning, because something like that breaches the world. You know, so for me, part of my experience of Exeter, not that I don't really think about Exeter very much, but I've realised that part of my experience of Exeter, I have a subliminal image of this centre of Exeter and this ancient, and because it's very old, I guess I expect it would always be there. You know, the other parts of Exeter changed a lot, they were modern, but part of my image of Exeter was that's how the centre of Exeter looks. And it isn't going to look like that anymore. So there's in a way, that's the point of this work is not to defend against that, but to bring it in so that we get interested in, and things are not linear. So we can be, you know, concerned, I hope, you know, concerned for the people of Exeter, I hope nobody's been killed, I don't... You know, and that event impacts sort of everything. It impacts our personal sense of personal life. You know, maybe not centrally, but it's sort of. Oh, it might be. You know, what happens when we hear about something like that? Maybe it taps into some very deep vein of personal disturbance. Maybe it doesn't. It's a mystery. And. These are all the aspects of life that need to be invited into the centre of experience, into the mystery of the Grail. Now, one of the ways of this place of receptivity that I talked about, of creating this chalice of communion. One of the words the Welsh bards used to use for this kind of state is they called it a word called tau, or dao, which means silence, becoming quiet. And there's something about this sense of inner silence, embodied inner silence, as opposed to feel like a silence that is more dissociated, that is at the heart of this work, really. But it's kind of interesting, this Welsh word, because it sounds like the Chinese word Dao. It's got exactly the same sound. And at first when I came across this, I was sort of playing around with it a bit, thinking, that's kind of interesting, isn't it? But as I got more and more curious about it, and as I got interested in it, because I follow the etymology of the Welsh word, because I come from Swansea, where Fernall also lives, And Swansea in Welsh is called Abertawe, which is the town on the Tawe. Now, Tawe is the silent river. It comes out of the word Tau. And the Tawe.
The word Tau.
Tau, T-A-W. It's pronounced Tau, Tau, and it's got a similar, you know, the Chinese word is T-A-W, well, it's in Chinese characters, but the English approximation is T-A-O, but they sound the same. But what was interesting, as I got interested in the etymology of Tau, is that it does mean silence in modern Welsh, but it is the silence of, where the word comes from, it means the silence of a quiet river at night, moving slowly at night. It comes out of an Indo-European root called Taus, T-A-U-S, which again has that same meaning of a river moving or ice melting. So it's got this sense of the melting of ice or a quiet river at night. It was a bit stunning because the etymology of Tao, the Chinese word Tao, is a river moving, a watercourse. Wow. Yeah, it's really bizarre. You know, it's a sort of. Who knew that the Chinese were really Welsh? It's astonishing. I'm amazed. I don't know what it is. I mean, it's obviously bizarre. I mean, it's a bizarre combination. But what's interesting is the Taoists and the Bards are describing the same experience, because that place of inner silence, the place of the melting of ice, the place of flow. It is exactly this place that we're talking about. When we come into this inner stillness, when we create the conditions, and this image of the river is interesting because a river is a whole ecology. It needs firm banks. It needs containment. It needs clarity, and it needs not to be obstructed if it is going to flow. There needs to be, if it's not going to be ice, it needs a certain amount of warmth. It holds within us this image of communion, this image of things coming together. And when you look at we'll look at this a little, the Taoist text, the Tao Te Ching, you find very similar images about working with flow, working with freezing, and you find in slightly different language very similar descriptions of things that the bards and the grail seekers are talking about. And why, of course, that is because we're dealing with something that is beyond culture here, that is fundamentally human. So there's something about this search for the grail, search for flow, for connection, that actually cuts right across culture, that takes us deeply into the human collective. And it is just a bizarre, interesting confluence, really. Not coincidence, but a confluence of old Chinese ideas and old Welsh ideas that together, as they flow together, can really help us work with this experience in our life. So we will look a little at some of the old Chinese ideas around this, and I think, and again, it's like a fusion idea, looking at some of the Welsh ideas, looking at medieval ideas, looking at the, but it's all in the service, really, not for the sake of knowing about these things, which is kind of interesting, but not the point. It's really about how do we deepen this process. How do we enable the melting and the flow? How do we irrigate our own inner life, our own inner land, our own outer land? You know, that whole thing about irrigation, not too much, you know, you need enough for things to grow, you need enough warmth, not too much warmth, you need enough wetness and enough dryness, you need enough differentiation, you need enough connection. So it's learning about that, learning in a way to become effective gardeners of the soul and the souls of those around us. And as part of that, the connection between randomness and order, there needs to be order. So of course there is a plan. There is a, you know, I have a plan for the year. I told you about it in the email I sent you all. And of course there is, as we engage with each other, there is a chaotic, random energy which is deeper than the plan, and yet we need the plan. So there's a dialogue, so this process of dialogue all the time between the formed and the unformed, between the, if you like, we could say the known and the unknown, in the service of something that is mysterious, that is both partly known and partly unknown. And so there's a sense of that, so that's, and that image, there's another, you know, there's another great image in this sort of extension pack, which is the image of that, of the Knight of Fiery Hope kneeling before the lady and whose face is shining like the sun. So there's this image really of the kind of that energy that is formed, that is devotional, but is focused at the service at something of something larger. Well, the service really of the kind of the goddess, you could say, the divine feminine, but even more than the divine feminine, also this mysterious light that is beyond masculine and feminine both. So these images are kind of quite helpful reminders. And the Just I'll finish on this little brief description of the extension pack, and then I'm going to look at the whole pack actually in more detail later. But the whole extension idea is to look at core disciplines of contemplation, right, that we can practice. So we take this stance of being the knight and this practice of being the grail as actually the central practice. And then the four cards that come off this that represent the four aspects of the extension deck. The one with the knight and the knight and the lady is called the suit of the song or the singing. It's associated with creativity, with bringing in the new. And it's connected with the song that arises out of this place of Tao. It's the flow. It's the awen that manifests from the still place in the heart. So it's the practice, the practice of the awen in different ways. And it's always the bringing in of the new, of creating the new light, the new form, the new song, the new note. It's balanced by this beautiful card here, which has this image of an island and a swan boat. And this is called the suit of transitions, because as you bring in the new, you create transition, you create change, you create disturbance. Ampi the cat, the new cat, creates disturbance in the lives of Alex and Becky. Right, so he comes in, he's already loved, he is already creating chaos. So there is that energy of the new, and then there is the process of transition, like learning to love Ampi, learning to find out how can we all live together harmoniously, how can we allow Ampi to change our lives in a sustained way. And the image here is a great image, because it's a very Avalonian image. This is the swan boat and the island and the mysterious island. Now this is one of the core myths of the place that you're sitting in. You know so the bringing in of the new, the listening to the song takes you to a new place. In the Grail stories, it takes you to the island of Avalon, the island of apples, the island with the dead made new again. And so there's a whole little set of images in that set about the process of transition. One of the images of which is this glyph. So having brought in the new, we have to go through a process of transition which enables the new to be incorporated. The other two, so that's at the bottom of back. There's a this card here, which is called, the card itself is called Sovereignty, and we have the image, the Arthurian image of the sword in the stone.
With a lion.
And in a sense, this card is part of it, of a suit called Shapeshifting, because it's all about identity. Because actually, as we bring in the new, as we experience transition, we become, our identity changes. Becky's now a cat owner. A few months back, Becky was not a cat owner. Becky's identity has shifted a bit. Ian didn't used to ride an exercise bike. My identity is definitely shifting around that. And the images that come, but the interesting thing about this image, this of the sword and the stone, and because is that the sword in this instance is not taken out of the stone, so it is thrust more deeply into the stone. So it is an act of incarnation. And the paradox of this suit is learning, it's called shape-shifting. So learning to shift identity is actually an act of embodiment, an act of deeper, it's not an act of disembodiment. If you like, the will and the clarity represented by the stone enters more deeply into the body, more deeply into the earth. And in that process becomes more fluid. So we'll explore that kind of mystery.
Is it about sinking
your energy? Sinking your energy, not just your energy, though, also your identity, your sense of self. And in sinking, not becoming fixed, not becoming locked, not becoming imprisoned. Discovering fluidity, discovering a capacity to deal more effectively with incarnation, to deal more effectively with trauma by fluidly moving. The final... Final card in here is this card that represents the Grail chalice on green or on grass in a not yet completed cathedral against a field of stars. Now this pack is called Priestcraft. It's being a priest or priestess of the Grail, which is the capacity to create a holding that enables the transpersonal light to become focused and present within the realm of incarnate experience, of embodied experience. And so what you've got here is you've got this kind of the image of a cathedral space that's open to the stars, that is connected to the earth, and that has within this this chalice that is the container. So in a certain sense, you could say that this fourth bit of the work is about creating containers which enable the experience of the earth and the transpersonal and the transforming energy to become held and focused enough so that it becomes tangible. So we will be exploring, and so all of these are kind of paradoxical things in some ways.
Ian?
Yes.
Pack,
yes, anywhere. Yes, you can download, because you've got the original one, haven't you? If you go on the Lorien website,
yeah,
you can download a PDF which has all the stuff about that.
Okay, great.
Thank you. I'll bring tomorrow the exact website page for you to go. So you can just download. So you can just download that from that. Yeah. You get that from Lorien, which is or Amazon, or you can also get it from Amazon.com, can't you, I think? Yes. Rob, is that where you got it from?
I sent an email.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, so there's an Amazon address on the Lorien. That was also in my original email, but if you haven't got it, you can get it from them. Amazon's cheap. Probably, actually, Amazon was slightly cheaper, wasn't it? Yeah, because that's the trouble with the American postage. I'm quite done with it. There is another pack, which Lorien have produced, which is a little pack, which has both the original cards and the extension pack on it. I'll leave that out. It's smaller, so it depends if you like smaller cards. Its images are actually a bit brighter than the original pack, and I don't know if it's maybe they've been printed differently, but or because they've got these coloured borders which seem to do something with it. So you might want to think about if you're kind of I mean, obviously you've got it, you probably don't need it, but if you are thinking about getting an extension pack, you may want to have a look at this as well and see if you prefer a whole pack, because I think it's pretty much the same price actually. Yeah. So any other, just need to finish really for lunch, but any burning questions before we finish around this? So just a sort of overview to get us started really. Yeah. Cool. Okay, great. So we'll have an hour then. So if we come back...